everyone, and welcome to Inauguration Day. We're done. Like, he's already, Trump's gone. That's in the past. We're looking forward, not back, but only in the hopeful way. Hopefully not in the prosecutorial way. But anyway, I'm John Adirola, very excited to walk you through an hour of not only a little bit of talk about the inauguration. We're certainly going to be talking about both Trump's leaving, Biden's coming in, but also some other news of the day. And when I say we, I mean me. And despite the fact that it's Wednesday, it is Inauguration Day. So we decided we're going to give you something special. We're going to give you Cenk Uygur. How's it going, Cenk?
Good, brother. How you doing?
I'm feeling pretty good. I wish it could be a cleaner good. And I know we're already being criticized for being as like occasionally negative in our coverage, but that's just like we don't put aside everything just because the good thing's happening. That's not who we are. So people can't really be too surprised that we feel happy, we feel relieved. We have an opportunity, an opening is now available to us to apply pressure and get some good stuff. But there's a lot of work that's coming, and I'm not ready to take 6 weeks off or anything.
Yeah, it's nonsense. I love you, but it's not news. Saying, oh, you should stop criticizing things that you know to be true. You should stop saying things that are true for any period of time. A day, 6 weeks. No, that's not how news works. I remember when I was at MSNBC and Barack Obama had just given a speech about the Egyptian revolution. And they told me not to comment on it honestly afterwards. And that you had to wait a certain period of time. And I remember literally having a conversation with, how long? Do you wait a minute, an hour, a day, a week before you can tell the truth about the speech? I mean, what an absurdity. No one's going to care about that speech a week from now. So no, the time to be honest is always.
Yeah,
so totally, that's kind of how news is supposed to work.
And we're going to try to make this hour work. Thank you to everyone who's joining us, regardless of what platform you're on. Some of you have already been watching for a few hours, but please like this stream and share it so that people know we're active as we go through these many stories. I did want to let you know something special, though, before we launch into this first story. And we're going to have a little bit of fun to start things off. This is not necessarily going to be, although there are some important substantive things coming, this is not going to be just hardcore on, you know, all that. Like, we're going to have a little bit of fun, but we have an announcement. And it's an announcement that we've sort of made before, but it's official now, okay? As of right now, if you bring up your little phone and you load up your little TikTok, you'll find the damage report on there. No big deal. You'll find me. You might find Cenk from this show on there soon. I'm seeing a break in the news, but are we still live? Can we confirm if we're still live? Okay, good. Well, and now that we're back from that break, we're still on TikTok following that break. So definitely take a look at that. We've been having a little bit of fun with it. There's already some videos up. If you haven't already, it's a lot of fun. If you don't use TikTok, well, I didn't before either, but I'm learning it. If I can learn it, I think you too, you can too. So go search at The Damage Report on there. And you can give us ideas of what sort of content you'd like to see from The Damage Report on TikTok starting now.
Yeah, so John, I'd like to say for my part, welcome TikTok. It's good to have you here. And obviously my middle name is TikTok. Although in Turkish there's some chance it could be. I be TikTok gelsin buraya. Anyways, will I be doing dancing on TikTok?
Maybe.
I was gonna say not likely, but you never know with me. There's a little shoulder shimmy every once in a while, so it could happen. And my only real comment on it is some good stuff has happened on TikTok. I mean, TikTok busted up Donald Trump in a way that I kind of loved.
That's true.
I'm here for it now, quite literally.
Yeah, no, totally. I'm really hoping that in my initial experimentation on TikTok, I don't run afoul of the K-pop group. So I'm going to try not to ruffle too many feathers there. But anyway, with that, why don't we launch into a few of our stories, including a little bit of fun. If you thought we were being too negative, well, this is going to be the exact opposite of that. It's not like on Inauguration Day, I needed a pick me up. It was already a good day, but I can't say that I didn't smile when I saw this tweet from Greta Thunberg with a picture of Donald Trump getting onto the helicopter. He seems like a very happy old man looking forward to a bright and wonderful future. So nice to see. And if you don't know what she's doing there, let's bring that up. as he goes. And if you don't know what she's doing there, it's a reference to his September 2019 tweet against her, saying she seems like a very happy young girl looking forward to a bright and wonderful future. So nice to see. Like mocking one of her greatest moments, I think, in that speech right there. So look, the idea that somewhere out there, I guess over an ocean, Greta Thunberg is smiling a bit because Donald Trump is no longer in a place to deregulate our environment, block progress on dealing with climate change, Cenk. That makes me a little bit happier today.
Yeah, no, it's an awesome tweet. There's nothing I enjoy more than a good clapback. Now, this clapback was a couple of years in the making, so it took a while to get here. But like action on climate change, it couldn't have gotten here any sooner. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what I'm enjoying more, that tweet or the fact that we're in the Paris Accords again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I know.
That's true. Which is certainly something, although I think Greta would be the first person to say that's the ground floor. That's literally the bare minimum. But anyway, Greta's a relatively private person. There's a lot that we don't know about Greta. But one thing we do know is how she likes her revenge served. And it's cold. It's cold. Because that's not the only time. She responded to him in November of last year. And honestly, I don't even remember exactly what this is a response to, because Trump's tweet is blocked because he's blocked on Twitter now. But when she said, "So ridiculous, Donald must work on his anger management problem, then go to a good old fashioned movie with a friend, chill, Donald, chill." Again, mocking the thing that he said to her when he was so mad. And this is just one of the things, one of the petty things not to forget from the Trump era. He was so angry that a little girl got Time Person of the Year that he began mocking her on social media. That's what she is referencing there. What a ridiculous time.
He was jealous of a 16-year-old. He's just the saddest man in America. And now, quite literally, he's in Florida sulking and crying as we speak. I'm not even like exaggerating. I think there's an excellent chance he is literally crying right now. MAGA tears flowing down his orange cheeks. And Greta and the rest of us are celebrating because this idiot monster is no longer in office and the planet is literally a little safer today than it was yesterday.
A little safer. Yeah, they always like to say that Trump doesn't drink alcohol. Does that last through today? I wonder. Anyway, okay, let's move on to other news. Looking forward.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today, and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Donald Trump is no longer president, and we're the first to say he doesn't have any power. And we mean when we say that he doesn't have any direct political power. We don't have to worry about some sort of executive order making it so that same-sex couples have a harder time adopting, you know, like just at the drop of a hat. Stephen Miller's worst ideas on immigration don't immediately become policy anymore. All of these are good things, but it isn't to say that he won't have some sort of power going forward. And I, for one, want to understand what that might look like. and we're finding out in the past couple of days one idea of what it might look like. That is that President Trump has reportedly floated the possibility of starting a new political party as he prepares to leave the White House amid internal struggles within the Republican Party. The ironic thing, of course, being that the Republican Party, like to the bitter end, was so deferential to him that multiple senators tried to steal the election for him immediately after being evacuated from the building because of the goons he sent in. They would have been perfectly happy to kill every one of them. But they didn't successfully overturn it. And so he considers that the ultimate betrayal. And now he's thinking about this. He apparently wants to call it the Patriot Party because he is a very, very clever person. But anyway, Cenk, we know that there's like the potential media road, there's the potential political road. We thought maybe it might come in the form of his children running as Republicans or him running as a Republican in 4 years. A third party, what do you think about that as an option?
I love it. I have been against a third party on the left for a long time. And I've taken a lot of heat from progressives for that. Some progressives. And why? Do I think the Democratic Party is awesome and I want to protect it? Hell no. Hell no. But if you have a third party, it is going to split your vote and let fascists win. It's just a fact. Now, it's not a fact in primaries. In primaries, it's totally different. And if you want to make an argument for structural change, like ranked choice voting, I love it. How can I help more? So, and we have featured third parties on the Young Turks in the early and even in the late stages of elections because we're fair and we want you to know all of your options, even if I don't necessarily agree with one of those options. So now I tell you all of that because if you've got a third party coming from the right, I am positive that the Republicans will be screwed. Like if it's anything real, if Trump manages to land it, and that's a big if because he's literally the most incompetent person I have ever seen in public life. So, I mean, if he's putting together a party, he can't put anything together. So there's gonna be no cake, there's gonna be no balloons, there's gonna be no nothing. He's not gonna have planned any of it. Yeah. So I assume that the Steve Bannons of the world will lead the charge and the Stephen Millers. It'll be a party of pure fear and hatred. That means it'll siphon away a ton of Republican voters because that's the core of the Republican Party. Yeah. If they split that vote in a way that is real and effective, then the Republican Party's dead. And you know, a fourth party then becomes interesting because then at that point, you're not automatically handing a win to fascists. So it has a lot of consequences. But yeah. John, if it's real, it's the greatest development in, honestly, one of the greatest developments in American political history.
Yeah, and that's not to say that it couldn't have a lot of really negative consequences. You know, a more pure, unadulterated version of Trumpism might lead to more radicalization, extremism attacks, and things like that. They could have those sorts of consequences, but yeah, based on the fact that our system is set up the way it is in terms of how votes are calculated and how winners are determined, this stands a very real chance, if it's done in a serious fashion, of devastating Republican chances of winning national elections and maybe statewide elections too. Honestly, anywhere where they compete, the Dems will be much more likely to win. That's just a natural consequence of the system. Now, if they wanted to first change to ranked choice or approval voting or something like that, that is a serious way to pursue a third party on the right that could actually succeed. But if you don't want to do that, you want to skip right to the party, then that's the outcome. On the other hand, that was assuming that it's a serious attempt to win elections. You can also, Trump could be setting up this third party as an amazing, durable, long-standing way to make a bunch of money. He can start a party with him as the figurehead, and they can start PACs and they can raise money and they can do some ads and they can technically be running, but it could be an amazing way to make money. I mean, after the election, he spent 2 months raising hundreds of millions of dollars to fight the fraud and stop the steal. He didn't stop the steal, he didn't fight the fraud, he was the fraud, but he made a ton of money. That money's still out there, by the way. How much of it did he spend? I don't know, 10%? He's just got the rest of it. So you can set up a third party just to personally enrich yourself. And that seems like exactly the sort of thing a person like Donald Trump would do.
Well, John, I'm here for it on that count too. So if you want to rob Republican voters of their money so they can't contribute to causes that might actually help their side, great. And in fact, if they give their money to a thing that's going to hurt their side, amazing, amazing, go for it. Give all your money to Donald Trump, you suckers. So give it so that he'll have it, even though he's already rich, and you won't, even though you're not. And it'll be completely and utterly wasted and will not accomplish any of your goals. In fact, it'll be counterproductive to your goals. So please donate to the Patriot Party, make it a reality. So if you want to do something smart, even though it won't rip the Republican Party apart, and you wanted to unite with progressives and voting for ranked choice voting or real election reform that gets us to a more stable democracy, I vote yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm happy to take that. And then the Patriot Party can be real, and a progressive party could be real. And so if they want to push in that direction, fantastic. I'll help them on policy grounds because it's the right thing to do. But likely they will not do any of that. It will be a giant scam. It'll be for the personal enrichment and psychological comfort of Donald Trump. And the right way to do this is within a party. So, and by the way, the people who did that best were the Republicans, the Tea Party. They easily took over the entire Republican Party. Well, they people don't talk about the Tea Party anymore. You know why? Because it's called the Republican Party now.
Yeah.
That no one disagrees with any part of the Tea Party anymore in the Republican Party. We're doing it within the Democratic Party with the Justice Democrats. And soon, not soon, but within some period of time, 4, 6, 8, 10 years, whatever, however long it takes, the Democratic Party will be the Justice Democrats. That's the right way to acquire power. Since Trump is not doing it the right or smart way, I love it. All he'll do is rip the Republican Party apart.
Yeah. Before we move on to our first break, I want to ask Cenk a couple of questions about Trump moving forward and what we just went through really fast. The first being something that we brought up in our coverage earlier, but we didn't really get into. We're talking about the pardons and breaking down the sort of people that he pardoned. He didn't pardon himself and he didn't pardon his kids. He didn't pardon Rudy Giuliani. Why? And those might be different answers maybe, but why do you think he didn't do that? Like something that in theory could protect him from a lot of trouble going forward that he could have done, but didn't. Why?
So number one, he knows that his main problem is in New York and that he can't pardon himself out of New York crimes. Those are state crimes, not federal crimes. So it makes it slightly pointless to pardon yourself. That's where his finances were, Deutsche Bank, that's where all of his trouble is, okay? So, but number two, and the reason why he chose not to do it anyway, even though he would have gotten some benefit out of being pardoned from the federal crimes, is because the one thing Donald Trump understands and what I've always given him credit for is how the spotlight works and how media works. So he knows if he pardons himself, everyone is talking about why Donald Trump pardoned himself and what crimes and what criminality is Trump excusing for himself. He knows that's terrible optics. If you're having a debate about what crimes Donald Trump has done, Trump loses that by definition. And so he didn't want that optics. And since it was going to be largely pointless, I think that's why he didn't do it.
So yeah, I mean, look, that's the thing that occurs to me, but for his actual base, how easy would it be for him to say, because of the 4-year witch hunt the deep state has perpetrated against me, I am forced to pardon myself for crimes I haven't committed just to keep the deep state at bay. Couldn't he say that as a defense? I feel like red hatters would lap that up.
Look, he could do anything and say anything. So it doesn't matter. The immovable 1/3 of the country that loves him, he could shoot their mom on Fifth Avenue right in front of their eyes and say, I did it for you. And they would believe it in a second. Instantly they would believe it. It reminds me of a kid that joined a frat in the college that I went to. And he said, I would kill my mom for my frat. And it was one of the most disturbing things that I've ever heard. Wow. And that is how cults work. So they would do it for Trump. I hear you, John, that he could have come up with an excuse for it. But nonetheless, the conversation would have been about what kind of a criminal is Donald Trump. And he had enough sense to know that that's not a conversation he wants to be in.
Okay. And like I said earlier, I want to remind people, and this is the sort of thing that stops me from becoming more popular. I was wrong about that. I predicted yesterday that he would. I think a lot of people did. There was a lot of reason to believe, but he didn't. So maybe credit to him. I don't know, just in terms of savviness. Super fast follow-up question though, Cenk. We've been sort of wondering, like nobody even remembers this because it was a billion years ago and time doesn't exist before Trump became president. But there was a period when TYT was so frustrated with Donald Trump and his racist conspiracy theories that we used to blur his face whenever he would be on screen. Are we returning to that or have we moved way past that as a country and as a company?
Yeah, so actually to be slightly more accurate, in the beginning we had him completely banned, like Ann Coulter.
That's true.
We would never speak of him. When he started running for president and was a real candidate and had a chance of winning, we blurred his face. And then once he actually started winning, we unblurred his face because we had no choice because we do news. Mm-hmm. And so before it wasn't news because it was just a game that Donald Trump was playing for his personal enrichment. Nothing he said he meant. So it was that was our news judgment not to cover him because it was all a show. Yeah. It's like we wouldn't cover a reality show as actual news, right? And so will we go back to banning him? No, because whether we like it or not, he is still news. There's no question about it. A third of the country loves him and wants him to be dictator. That's news.
Okay. Are you not reasonable? We've just ended a 4-year period of the media having to respond to the fact that every day there's a million news stories. The fifth biggest news story of any one of these days would have dominated the Obama era news for days at the very least. We're hopefully moving out of that time in terms of Trump's crazy statements, crazy policies, all of that. And so my concern is that we might be moving into a time much more like before Trump, where now we're gonna pretend that all of that didn't happen and look for tiny little things to blow out of proportion to become brown suit scandals and latte salute scandals and those sorts of things. And so I wanna talk about something that we mentioned earlier in our coverage, and that is that Biden apparently has a problem. I don't know if you know this, it's his Peloton. It doesn't exactly comport with his regular Joe from Scranton persona, they say. And then also something about cybersecurity. So that maybe potentially is an issue. But the idea that this article, which is up on the New York Times, as well as the Seattle Times and other places, says that his regular guy from Scranton persona could be undercut by the fact that this 78-year-old rides a Peloton at home and that his wife rides a Peloton. Cenk, what do you think?
Okay, I'm of two minds on it. Number one, are you kidding me? I mean, that didn't take long. We're back to complaining about mustard on burgers and tan suits and saluting while holding coffee. Really, are we gonna do this? And so, number one, I'm not having a conversation about false equivalency between a violent coup to murder your vice president and democracy and a Peloton bike. We're not having that conversation. So end of this. Now, having said that, there's a second reason why it's in a sense almost more nefarious. Because talking about Joe Biden's policies on healthcare in the middle of a pandemic is much more challenging. That would actually be holding Biden accountable. And the press doesn't really want to do that. Because so if you had, like if the first article was, Joe Biden says you should get your vaccine for free because we're in the middle of a pandemic, but he says your overall healthcare should not be free. And if you cannot afford your bills, the insurance company should bankrupt you. Well, that would be an interesting and important policy challenge on day one, but they're never gonna write that. They're not gonna write it. They're not gonna write it because they're on his side on that. So the Peloton thing is both absurd false equivalency, but also a release valve to make it appear as if they're challenging corporate power in this country when they're doing the opposite.
Yeah, and look, obviously, you know, this is an article. We'll see. The reason I'm putting it on the show is because of the fear that this is the opening of the floodgates, that that it is a two-part thing. It's the media sort of going back into the model that you laid out so well, but then also some of the politicians going back into the same pattern. So something that we've been expecting and predicting, we've talked about on the show over the past year, is like in anticipation of the election, is happening now. During Janet Yellen's hearing was it yesterday, you had Republican senators bringing up how we need to start taking the deficit seriously and the national debt, that these are massive things that suddenly should be a focus. Like whatever Biden plans to do or tries to do should be viewed through the lens of, we have to get our fiscal house in order. After literally years of those senators not giving a damn about that whatsoever. We were predicting it because it's a pattern that we've seen. Just like the Peloton, this is a cycle that we go through seemingly every 4 years. And my fear is that not just that they'll do it, but that it's gonna be sort of like you were talking about early in our coverage today, that the Democrats present themselves as better managers and more responsible managers. And if you're responsible, then you're the one that takes care of the deficit. And so you do austerity for 4 years or 8 years, just long enough to not deliver anything for the people so that you can then hand over this new renewed financial situation for America to the next Republican president, who can immediately throw $2 to $3 trillion to the wealthiest people in America and jack up the defense budget. And so I fear that we're moving into sort of a media political complex that's designed to hem in and limit the Democrats. The Democrats are gonna step eagerly into that new pen, and that is going to raise the odds that we get a Republican. Like we for decades now have been going back and forth between Democratic and Republican administrations. They don't have to win the popular vote to do that, but they do get the presidency in the end. And so I'm already worried about Biden, thanks to the media and the other politicians, potentially creating that same situation in 4 or 8 years, that we're just gonna hand things back over. He's not gonna deliver.
So John, you're opening up a giant conversation there, because one of the biggest mysteries of the next 4 years is how the media is going to handle things. If they go back to politics as usual, which is the more likely route, much more likely, right? But we're gonna have an absolute rebellion online. And then how does that rebellion online interact with the mainstream media? Because when they say deficits, after being absolutely silent for 4 straight years on deficits, as the Republicans murdered our budget and put a $2 trillion hole in it for tax cuts for the wealthy. No, I'm not having a conversation about deficits. None for the next 4 years, none. If you dare bring it up, you're an absolute liar. You don't care about the deficit. I don't care if you're Jake Tapper or you're Mitch McConnell or you're Joe Manchin. You didn't say anything the last 4 years, as you all got tax break after tax break after tax break. I'm not going to abide by your goddamn lies about how you're concerned about the deficit, but only when we could help the average person, because a Democrat is in office, but never when a Republican is in office to help all of you multimillionaires. Hell no. So we will go to war over that, mainly with the mainstream media. But you know, Biden and Manchin are part of the game. They want to throw the game. It's a rigged game in favor of the wealthy. Let's call it what it is. So, and lastly, John, the one good part of the Peloton story is there ain't no regular Joe and nobody believes it. The only people who believe it are the people inside Washington. He was a regular guy back in Scranton approximately 2 million years ago. He was half a regular guy in Delaware 1 million years ago. He took the train back and forth. He was the poorest senator. I got it. But he's been in Washington for 47 years. I don't know a single politician more establishment than Joe Biden. He's one of the most esteemed senators of not just my lifetime, in American history. He was vice president and president. Don't tell me he's a regular Joe. Mm-hmm. Only people in Washington believe that. No one in the rest of the country believes he's a regular Joe. He's part of the establishment, and regular Joe is just marketing mythology. So I'm past it, it's absurd. I never believed it in the first place. Let's get real.
Let's get real. Okay, we're gonna move on to other news. Reminder, if you're watching this on a platform that has it, please like the stream so that people know we're live. And with that, let's move into another potential area for Biden action in the near future. One of the darkest moments of the Trump period was the Khashoggi incident, the Saudi-led assassination plot against a journalist that America did everything it could to distract from, to cover up for, to apologize for. And that stain has just been there. Most people have forgotten about it or moved on, but it's still there. And there are people who want justice for Jamal Khashoggi, some answers for his family. And potentially now with Biden coming in, we might move at least a little bit in that direction. Because during a Senate confirmation hearing on Tuesday, Senator Ron Wyden told Avril Haines, this is the nominee to be the next DNI, the Director of National Intelligence, that she had an opportunity to quote, immediately turn the page on the excessive secrecy and lawlessness of the outgoing administration. He then asked if she would submit the report if she is confirmed. And she said, yes, Senator, absolutely, I will follow the law. The decision means that the US is likely to officially assign blame for Khashoggi's brutal murder to the Saudi kingdom's de facto ruler, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. And so it hasn't happened. Theoretically, they could change their mind once Avril Haines, in theory, gets the post of DNI. But having the actual report come out, the actual intelligence that was gathered, like actually laying out what we know about what was done in that assassination, I think that that could potentially be a sort of wake up call, a slap in the face of our relationship with the Saudi government right now. And I'm sure for the Khashoggi family would provide at least a little bit of solace after not just the brutal murder, that was a horror, but the American complicity with that murder could potentially start to change.
Well, it's super important for precedent too. It means the rule of law is back and you're not allowed to murder US residents and US journalists. That's not a thing that's acceptable. That's a message you have to send not just to Khashoggi, not just in the case of Khashoggi to Mohammed bin Salman, but it's a message you have to send to Vladimir Putin and others, Kim Jong-un, who've all sanctioned state murder of their opponents in other countries, let alone their own countries. So that's why it's important. But John, this is one where I don't know how it's gonna end up. And I'm really curious about it because, okay, sure, you know, they'll yell at bin Salman, but are they going to do something? Are they going to try to remove him from power? Because if they don't, we didn't really solve anything. And so, okay, bad boy, slap on the wrist. But remember, the Saudis are now really, really good allies with Israel. So that means actual action against the Saudi royalty is very unlikely. If it happens, I'll give them all the credit in the world because they would deserve it and it would be bold action. And since he's starting with it, maybe. So I got an open mind on it and I'd love to see it.
Yeah, in terms of action, I think that could come in a lot of different forms. Actually, removing it from power, that potentially could be going down a devastating route of a war with Saudi Arabia or something like that, which I would prefer to avoid.
No, but no, John, let me just clarify real quick. No, under no circumstances. I'm not talking about military. I'm talking about putting economic and political and diplomatic pressure. Exactly. There's a million princes in Saudi Arabia. Pick another one.
That's pretty funny. Distancing the US militarily and economically from Saudi Arabia could be a significant punishment. I imagine the Saudis would see it as a significant punishment. And also in doing that could do a lot of good in other areas. Us cutting off our support in the variety of forms that it comes in right now for the Saudi war on the people of Yemen would be an objective good in its own right. And also could be presented as a consequence for the assassination. We could potentially stop participating and killing so many people, causing such devastation. Biden has said, friends, I'm gonna jump ahead of the last graphic, but during the campaign, he criticized Mohammed bin Salman, said that Saudi Arabia should be treated as a pariah, and said that they would seek to curb weapons sales to Saudi Arabia, as well as financial sanctions against Prince Mohammed bin Salman. And so we've sold under Trump a lot of weapons to the Saudi government. That's one way that in theory we could provide a little bit of consequences for what was done and also help to stop so much ongoing death and potentially in the future as well in that region.
Yeah, well, my last thought on it, John, is I'll believe it when you stop the war in Yemen, okay?
Yeah.
So that's a layup. That's a thing that could be done. You know, the whole first day thing is overused. But in the first week, first month, it doesn't matter, right? Well, it does matter because the earlier you stop it, the less people die. But Joe Biden, ending the funding to Saudi Arabia that in any way helps them prosecute the war in Yemen is a super easy thing to do, and is would be greatly welcomed by almost all Democratic voters, and by the way, by a lot of right wing voters. So you'll actually bring unity, the thing that you cherish most, but it'll cost your defense contractors a little bit. So let's find out who Joe Biden is.
Yeah. I also want to mention, just because we don't have like a dedicated spot for this, yesterday on the show, we were talking about some of the day one and week one actions that Biden would be undertaking. One more that we got a reference to is, again, this is on the level of absolutely the easiest thing in the world to do, but he's apparently going to issue an executive order to dissolve the 1776 commission. A panel stood up by President Donald Trump as a rebuttal to schools applying a more accurate history curriculum around slavery in the US. That was one of the, for about 2 weeks, causes of the right was fighting back against what the New York Times was doing in that area. So that's gonna be dissolved. I don't even know if it even really existed or what it was actually doing day to day, but it's another one of those things where day one, he can do that unilaterally. He doesn't have to worry about Congress or anything. So, yeah. So that's certainly good.
Well, John, he will definitely do that because, I wanted to come back to make one more point as you were alluding to 1776, Stephen Miller's book report on how racism is awesome. That guys, here's your guide to telling whether Biden is going to do something, do it begrudgingly or not do it at all. How much money is involved? The 1776 doesn't involve any money at all. And so it's a good way of getting credit with African American voters and any voter that cares and is a decent person by getting rid of that report. That's why it's layup on top of layup.
Yeah.
You'd be an idiot not to do that. And they're not stupid. They will do that, right?
Exactly.
But the minute you touch money, and with Yemen, for example, you touch a little bit of defense contractor money, well, then it gets harder. And the minute you touch giant money, like the healthcare insurance industry and the drug companies, then it gets near impossible. So that's your way of deciding whether Biden's gonna do something or not.
Yeah. And by the way, look, a lot of this, I know, because I've seen comments in like YouTube, like I saw one person said they were disappointed because today's a happy day and we seem so negative. And like, I get it, I totally get it. There's a lot of good stuff that is gonna happen instantly and going forward. We did that whole segment yesterday on the show about rejoining the Paris Climate Accords, ending the Muslim ban, reversing all this. It's great. It's great. And one of the things I was saying in the months leading up to the election, once it was gonna be Biden, was this is not gonna solve all of our problems, but it does mean that there are going to be occasional bits of good political news. That is not something we've experienced for literally years at this point. So all of that exists, we will give him credit, and today is a happy day, but we still have an obligation, and our obligation to our audience and to the country isn't that different than what it was yesterday, I would argue. So bear with us, please. Newsmax is out there. You remember Newsmax? They're like the third biggest cable company in the world now since they routinely beat Fox News. Anyway, they were covering the inauguration and they're taking it very serious. Not like objectively serious like a reasonable person would, but serious like a Newsmax viewer would want them to. And here is an example of what that looks like with Donald Trump's final moments as president.
There is no president more aware, Mark, of the optics than maybe John F. Kennedy, our first real television president. And it's interesting you bring up the Village People. So the song came out, YMCA, in 1978. Donald Trump was a young man in 1978, working in real estate in New York with his father. You know, the first line of that song is, "Young man, there's no need to feel down." President Trump had a hand in setting up the events of today, and I'm sure that was a song that he had some fun with back in the late 70s. And even though he will not be the president at noon Eastern today, there is no need to feel down. As he said, I'll be watching, I'll be listening, and I'll be back again in some form. Mark, any thoughts on what that might mean?
I think that's more than enough thoughts about what the choice of YMCA means. I think you didn't need to add any thoughts, actually, Cenk. God damn, are they taking this more serious than they need to?
I hear you, but there is something interestingly symbolic about it because they present an alternate reality so well and thoroughly that it even gets me to question for a second. And so I'm gonna just double check here. YMCA and that song in particular, Macho Macho Man, that's a gay anthem, isn't it?
I believe that for some in that community, it has been traditionally.
Yeah, so that's a song about how it's okay. You don't have to worry about hiding who you really are, and you can be out and proud. Mm-hmm. That's my understanding of it. But like they say it like, oh, Donald Trump, you know, it's about a macho guy like him and don't feel down. Wait, no, it's not. It's not about that at all. You're celebrating, you know, an anthem for gay Americans, and great, wonderful, but I don't think you know what you're doing. And second of all, think about how wonderfully sad that moment is, where Newsmax is like, "Don't worry, Donnie. I know you're crying, and I know you're down. We're all crying, Donald, MAGA tears. But don't be too down, Donald." Don't be too down, okay? You're so macho to us, but not in that way. But still, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Why can't he has some random songs that he likes? You know what I like? That there's no real reason why I would like this song, mostly because of how much before I was born that it came out. I love the song Waterloo by ABBA. My aunt used to play it, I guess. It doesn't mean anything to me. Like if I played it at some point, please don't do textual analysis about what I'm trying to imply. I just like it. It's a good song. I assume Trump liking Macho Man and YMCA is just a quirk of him. I'm not interested in engaging with it because it humanizes him, and I don't like that. But that's all it is. But Newsmax desperately has to maintain this new connection they have with his base. And so one of the reasons I want to cover this is my prediction is it's going to get weird over there. They have to admit that Biden won, which they resisted that as long as they possibly could. And that was one of the reasons so many people fled Fox News and places like Sean Hannity to them. But like, how do they keep it? What are they going to be saying about Trump on the one hand and Biden on the other hand to maintain that position as like the third news network? You know, ahead of Fox News. And I don't know that host. I don't know how significant that host is for Newsmax, but I think it's going to get weird and wild over there.
Yeah. Look, I like the song, The Devil Went Down to Georgia.
Me too.
I don't think he actually went down to Georgia. although, to be fair, Lynn Wood is there. So maybe, but you don't have to overinterpret the songs we like.
Agreed. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, let's turn to a little bit more. One of the right wing celebrities, possibly heroes on the right, was commenting ahead of Biden's inauguration. That's Dan Crenshaw. And here is what he had to say about the president elect.
Look, I want to hear some action behind this, all this talk of unity, especially from Biden. Okay, so I want Biden to act with a sense of humility.
Okay, so first of all, I would argue that Biden acts like, I would say, annoyingly with a sense of humility in terms of what he pushes for and how strong he pushes for it. But Cenk, Dan Crenshaw wants hard work to be put in by the Democrats towards unity. Yeah. What do you think about that?
No, look, it's of course absurd on his face, and politicians are amazing. The way they can just turn around and going. The day before when Trump was president, we have every right to rip Democrats' faces off of them and shove it down their throats. The day after Biden was, hey, listen, unity, brother. We're all about unity and humility. After Trump, you dare say the word humility. Dan Crenshaw, who sucked up to Trump 100%. I don't need it. I don't need it. Okay. But John, there's a really, really important point in there, which is that this is the problem with Joe Biden's endless talk of unity, because then the Republicans logically come back and go, okay, if you're going to do unity, here's the new tax cuts I want for my rich donors. Here's the more deregulation I want. Here's more wars I want. Here's all the things that I want. You said unity. If you want to unify, you have to give me goodies for the richest and most powerful people in the country. That's why it's a dumb idea.
Yeah, and let's say that he does. Let's say that he talks the talk, but also walks the walk in terms of giving them nonsense that they want. Based on our experience under Barack Obama, what do you think Biden and the Democrats are likely to get out of that?
Nothing.
Nothing.
So, but guys, that's why we're against so-called unity, because think of what the Republicans want. you're going to be hard pressed to find one decent thing on the list. Almost all of it is odious, disgusting things that are only for the rich, powerful, and the hateful, right? So by definition, Biden is saying, I will do some horrible things just to get along with Republicans. No deal, no interest in it at all. Screw that.
Yeah, and by the way, Dan Crenshaw there is talking about Biden, but let's also talk for just a second about Dan Crenshaw, because Dan Crenshaw, who wants Biden to act with humility to unify us. First of all, let's say clearly, after the Democrats winning the House in 2018 and the Senate and the presidency in 2020, thinks that the Dems need to be a little bit more, like have a little bit more humility. I'm gonna assume that he was not pushing for the Republicans to do that following 2016, that they needed to back off and not press their claims and all that. But also in terms of unity and humility, there is only one representative in the House that starred in a mock action movie of him parachuting in to punch Antifa in the face between the election and the inauguration. That was Dan Crenshaw, who wants humility. He pretended to be the star of Transformers or something as he fought the steal of the election. Like, he's not necessarily Lauren Boebert. He isn't being, you know, no one's claiming that he led tours through the Capitol. And he's not necessarily Ted Cruz or Josh Hawley, who after the attack used our government's balls to push for the overthrow of the election. But for him in particular to bring up humility after the cringeworthy cartoonish movie things that he's done, that seems like too much, but I guess he's working through it.
Yeah, so John, on the core of the unity message, so if you want unity on our ground, where Republicans, for example, and some of them do vote against wars, great, I love it. I'm happy to have the unity. If you want it on neutral ground, for example, election reform, you want to do real election reform, join Wolfpack, wolf-pack.com/join. They are actually nonpartisan and they actually want election reform. Great, I'm thrilled to do unity. You want unity on your grounds? That's not how it works. You lost the election, we won. We won the presidency, the Senate, and the House. You don't get to have unity on your ground. That's not how it works. And if Joe Biden wants to do that, it's not because he's a sucker. It's because he is on their ground. That's their unified ground, which is to help the rich and powerful.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Like we're gonna spend this day. We're gonna feel good. We're gonna have some expectations for the future. But all of those, like the House and the Senate, is full of Republicans that are going to be claiming unity for about a week, and then they are going to dig in their heels and try to stop literally anything from happening. And thank God that the Dems actually got the Senate. So some things they can't totally stop. Like if Ossoff had lost, Biden might not actually get a single judge for 4 years. That's the world they wanted. They didn't get it. Now they're talking about unity. They would have stopped literally every nomination. There's just an assumption of a filibuster for every piece of legislation. That's who we're dealing with. People who would have ground government to a halt for 4 more years are now talking about how Biden needs to jump through flaming hoops to prove how much he truly loves them.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.